Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, December 4th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody. Hello, America.
Yes, hello there, and also around the world. We do have listeners everywhere, because we hear from you. That's how I know. Shortwave goes worldwide, so pretty cool. And, you know, it has been a while since I've received anything from a listener from outside of the U.S. I mean, we hear from Canada all the time. And we have listeners, I know, in England. I know we have them in South Africa. I know we have them in Ireland. I know we have some listeners. Oh, Spain was one. Send us an email, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And, you know, give us an update and on what's happening in your locale, and we'll share it on the radio. So, gold today, we have a little pressure. We have a little bit of a stronger dollar today. So, gold was down 460 at 1837, but it was off the highs, but we'll take 1837. Silver's up 7 pennies at $24.23. Platinum was up another 30 bucks today at 1065. Although palladium was also up 32 at 2,368. The 10-year yield today, I'm sorry, the USDX today is up 0.12 at 90.80. Crude oil was up 37 cents at 46.01. Now I'll tell you what the 10-year yield did. I was a little bit early there. 10-year yield, 0.97, up 0.05. And you have the Dow today up 183 points at 30,152. The NASDAQ was up 87. Well, they just revised it. The Dow was up 248 at 3218. The NASDAQ up 87 at 12,464. The S&P was up 32 at 3699. European Asian markets were quiet. The only one that had much activity was London, was up almost 1%, but other than that. And, you know, Dave, it seems that the stocks just continue to make new record highs. Doesn't even really matter either. We're going to talk about the lower-than-expected increase in jobs. I mean, that was really no surprise, and maybe that's how the markets are betting on it, too. But, you know, perhaps they're thinking that, you know, with a weaker jobs report, it's, you know, maybe there'll be stimulus coming before next week or soon, I should say. So, I lost something here, Dave. So, yeah, I don't know if, I don't think it'll have any impact, a jobs report or anything like that. I don't think it's going to have any impact at all based on, to have stimulus come out. What do you think?
Well, will there be stimulus? Yes, at some point.
Yeah.
Will it be because of this report? I strongly doubt it. I mean, although, you know, we saw a couple of leadership position folks today in Congress, you know, come out and refer to the jobs report as, in terms of impetus or momentum for renewed talks. But it seems as though there have been renewed talks for 6 months. So I don't know how this particular report changes anything that we've seen over the last half year.
Let's talk about that report. The Labor Department this morning said that non-payroll Non-farm payrolls increased by 245,000. Headline unemployment rate edged down, though. 6.7. It's just funny. And remember, they've already come out and said that there's going to be miscalculations on this report. Counting short-term discouraged workers who stop looking for jobs and part-time workers looking for full-time jobs. You know, the more meaningful use, 6 jobless rate? Well, that was still over 12%. John Williams at shadowstats.com believes the actual rate, when you include long-term discouraged workers that were defined out of existence in 1994, is actually 26.3%. Those are the real numbers, folks. Today's data showed a worrisome decline in the participation, Americans participating in the labor force. Job gains missed everyone's estimates, partly reflected a decline of 93,000 temporary workers who had been hired for the census. The faint pulse raises odds that, we're going to head into next year with an even weaker labor force. Almost 4 million Americans are enduring long-term joblessness. Today's report may just help push Congress. Well, we talked about that by doing some new fiscal aid by the end of the year. And they're only going to pass it if there's a reason to pass it. They don't care if anybody is failing, because they're running out of money. That's the problem. I don't know. You're seeing the impact of the pandemic surge here. Jeffrey Rosenberg, he's BlackRock. We talked about them. The new, I don't even know what to call them.
The new elite. Citigroup.
The new elite that rules things outside of government and inside. Market reaction is really looking, though, that this is the policy response. I don't know, Dave. It's all nuts.
Well, undaunted by a glowing lack of boldness, Chicago Fed President Charles Evans said the report was, quote, a little disappointing. Indeed, a lack of boldness, Mr. President. The employment report is a mid-month snapshot, as we know, so jobs lost amid new restrictions and lockdowns put in place in the week since the 14th won't be reflected until next month's data. And not only did payroll gains come in below estimates, but hiring was concentrated in fewer industries, with the shift to online shopping this season accounting for a large portion of that. Transportation and warehousing added 145,000 workers, and that's the most since 1997, reflecting jumps in couriers, messengers, and warehouse workers. Retail employment fell by almost 35,000, reflecting less seasonal hiring than normal in some sectors. And leisure and hospitality rose by 31, following a 270,000 gain in October. Job growth slowed in a variety of sectors, including manufacturing, construction, professional and business services, as well as healthcare. And while prospects are growing again for lawmakers to approve another stimulus package, it's unclear whether negotiations that have been unsuccessful for months, as we just mentioned, could actually conclude with an agreement. The modest job gain, and I think it's all going to depend on January 5th. I think that's where a lot of it comes. I think the day will come soon that a drop in the stock market will force some holdouts, if you will, to come on board with some level of support. But again, I don't believe that's going to happen until, as Melody likes to say, they have to. Now, the modest job gains leaves employment almost 10 million still below pre-pandemic levels, and many Americans have been jobless now since losing work as far back as March and April. The ranks of the long-term unemployed, those out of work 27 weeks or more, increased by 385,000 last month to 3.9 million. That's the most since 2013. This group makes up more than a third of the total unemployed. We'll be talking more about this area later on in the program, Melody.
Well, Dave, isn't there how many billions of dollars that are still left in the CARES Act that hasn't been used?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's over $150
billion. So,
some of the programs.
So why don't they use that up? Why would you need another stimulus if they can't use that up?
And there had been talk of doing just that. But if they were going to go there, it was going to be as part of a broader, program. You know, somewhere in between McConnell's $500 billion and now the new bipartisan group's $908 billion. But I guess everyone is counting votes, and no one's seeing a majority in their respective houses just yet.
And you know what's really interesting, though, is, you know, there's, you know, $100 billion sitting there. It's not being used. The businesses that received the previous loans and so forth, they're probably doing okay. I mean, if they're going to do a stimulus, I'm not a fan of the stimulus, but if they're going to do a stimulus, it just never gets down to the people who really need it. And, you know, it's all divvied up and goes to the ones who, you know, probably, well, some were, but how many? We just received that list of all, I believe, that was just released of all of the businesses that received money.
I think you can say without, you know, blinking that the vast majority of it is going to those who need it least.
Need it least. Yes.
And therein lies the what we've been hearing a lot this year and the last it's been growing for a couple decades, but actually several decades, but just more recently about this inequity of the distribution of wealth and benefits in the country.
Well, you know, we hit the record highs in the stock markets, in the paper markets, and lots of times when you have them at the end of the year, it's the so-called Santa Claus stock rally that happens in December, but it's still questionable. No doubt a stellar November helped the S&P 500 index close above its upper monthly Bollinger Band. But that may be a signal that a period of consolidation is shortly around the corner. It could be in January, but it's coming, folks. Following each of these three such occurrences, the stock benchmark posted declines for at least the next 2 months. It's going to be longer than that. But first, the gauge climbed 11% last month and has started December with a more than 1% gain as some of these traders bet on a return to normal for the global economy next year. What are these people smoking or drinking? And it's going to be difficult to expect too much near-term upside without some sort of further pause or pullback. I mean, these people aren't even on this planet, Dave. They're not even living on this planet. Maybe that's why there's so many spaceships trying to get to Mars. Maybe they're already there. I mean, we have these indicators that work in normal times, and that's what these folks are talking about, in regular times. You know, and I have people who follow the charts and everything for gold. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't because they manipulated markets and so forth. How can real chart? We don't get the real truth, so how can charts really work? Might be based on a longer type trend instead of a day-to-day type thing, but... And I think this is and this is interesting, Dave, because, you know, this is what traders bet on. This is how they're positioning their portfolios based on this information. Am I right or wrong, Dave?
Oh, no, there's more and more of that going on. In fact, you know, we're seeing in some areas the most ever since people have been keeping track of stats like this. I mean, we got, you know, the S&P 500 climbing 11% last month, already up more than 1% this month. You have, excuse me, the CBOE volatility gauge that measures the volume of bearish options bets relative to bullish ones for individual stocks, also showing investor positivity at extreme levels. That indicator's five-day moving average has hit its lowest level in 20 years. The gauge can often be a contrarian signal for equity markets. And the equity rally has been so broad that almost every stock in the S&P 500 is heading upward. 93% of stocks in the index were trading above their 200-day moving average this week. That's the highest in 7 years. And of course, although technology shares have sort of fallen back recently, the NASDAQ 100 index, almost exclusively tech stocks, still managed to hit a fresh record high once again yesterday. So that's up 43% this year, trading about two standard deviations above its 50-day moving average. And that's a signal its rally has gone too far. And last, Melody, you've got some investors who like a fundamental approach to judge if a market's overextended. They like Yale Professor Robert Shiller's cyclically adjusted P-to-E ratio. U.S. stock valuations by that measure are back above their peak last seen in 1929.
Wow.
Although they're still well off .com era highs. Still
we know what happened then.
Well, yeah, indeed. I mean, these are just more signs that equities are ending their strong 9-month run and that it's past time to think about selling them and buying more gold and silver.
Hey, that's the music. That went by quick. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices of Integrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. We were finishing up the break with all these flashing signs for the end of the stock bull run. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about options trading in case any of you are doing that in your office at home. And you've probably been doing fairly well, and congrats. You know, we're here not to bring you bad news every day, but to bring you just some common sense. And it's happened before. It's going to happen now. And options trading is the new sports betting. And Dave, you talk about unintended consequences. Stay-at-home requirement recreated by the pandemic that has spawned a huge sub-industry in options trading, in tandem with an increase in equities trading that shows no signs of letting up until now, what we just talked about. Trading in equity options hit new highs in November, and that was continuing a trend that started earlier this year. Equity option trading is 50% above last year's levels year to date on all the option platforms, the NASDAQ, the CBOE, and ICE. NASDAQ 49%, CBOE 51%, and ICE 58%. Steve Sosnick from the Interactive Brokers said people have been stuck at home, many with $1,200 checks. And hey, what do you think they're doing with their rent loan moratoriums? And there's no sports to bet on.
Mm-hmm.
So they went into the stock market. Then they realized, hey, options have similar payoff structures to sport bets. And you say that the paper market's not a gambling casino. That analogy to sports betting is deliberate. The psychology of sports betting versus betting on stocks, it's very similar. With sports gambling, you stand to make some percentage of that money. It's the same thing with stocks and options. But with stocks and options, there are thousands of bets you can make every day. And when you are in an up market like we've been experiencing, you know, you can come to believe that the odds really are in your favor. Yeah, this guy Kyle Robinson, he tracks trading activity at Piper Sandler. He noted that much of the trading activity has occurred in day trading, buying in the morning, getting out in the afternoon. What type of activity, Robinson says? They're trading options, because many don't have the money to buy a lot of the stocks. You can buy options for a fraction of the price, and if you have options that move the same percent as the underlying stock, you can make money as if you owned that stock. But he also noted, far from acting irrationally, many day traders are correct to target option trading, Dave.
Well, how else are you going to buy Amazon, Tesla, Apple at its peak? I mean, buying options makes some sense for people who really want to get the benefit of those kinds of trades. Also helping the day trading phenom, zero commissions on many trades. Of course, the presence of social media and chat rooms that are full of discussions on high-profile names. Unfortunately, far too many of them by people who just don't know any of the technicalities underlying these trades. Another major factor, just the prevalence of new educational materials that are teaching traders how to trade options. So the increase in options trading, Melody, happening with similar increases in equity trading. At Fidelity, for example, trading volume in the third quarter was up 97% from a year ago. At Interactive Brokers, daily average revenue trades for November were up 174% over last year. Guy Sosnick speculates that all this day trading may have a limited shelf life regardless of future trends. He said, I wonder how much of this is tied to the fact that many people haven't had to pay their student loans. Well, next month they may have to start up again. The average student loan payment's around $400. That's a month. If you use that money to put in the market and you have to start paying that back, it's money that could flow out of the markets and, you know, in exponential numbers. When the pandemic is over, those staying at home, most of them, many of them anyway, will go back to work. When the vaccine comes out, volatility will likely go down, and that'll make it difficult to day trade. So volatility could indeed drop if the enormous amount of call buying dries up. I mean, one of the reasons that the volatility index, the CBOE VIX, has been stuck at around the 21 level despite a big rally is that the huge amount of call buyers has inflated that implied volatility. So the big question is going to be is whether these new traders are going to stick around for the next correction, which is just around the corner.
It's not easy to trade options. And as much as you make in one day, you can lose in a second. And usually people don't make. You always have those who make enough, but you have a whole lot more who lose, just like it is in Vegas. I mean, we've talked about this before. So options isn't easy. Been there, done that. It's great when you're winning, and you can make a lot of money playing options, but you have to be disciplined. And I don't know if these day traders that are so new are disciplined. I mean, they're not seasoned. So unless you're seasoned, you're not going to have the discipline. So it just means another round of people losing money that should have went to rent, should have went to paying down the debt, paying down their credit cards. And it reminds me when I lived in Arizona, I've shared this story. You lived in Arizona one of my younger days. And I can't recall how many people would say, well, we're going to Vegas for the weekend. We're going to triple our money. And then you get the phone call at the end of the weekend on Sunday. Can you send me $20 so we can have gas to get home? That happened more often than them coming home and saying we tripled our money. Aye. But that's it for options trading. We had a little bit here about the San Francisco, and I don't know, Mary Daly took the subject head on in a speech earlier this week. I thought we talked about this before.
We didn't, but...
We didn't.
No, maybe even Butch did.
Yeah. Let's go on and talk about inflation. We talk about inflation here, and there's a flood of recent economic data that confirms that inflation is coming. We know it's coming because of our currency, because of our dollar. There was a report yesterday on the services sector for November from the Institute of Supply Management. It was slightly better than expected, but still down from October's reading. The bigger story was in the prices paid index. Prices paid jumped to its highest level since early 2012. And it was rising for the second straight month and coming in above 60 for the third month in four and fourth month in six. So prior to June, The prices paid index hadn't risen above 60 since November 2018. So to increase in price, service prices has come in concert with increasing manufacturing prices. The ISM manufacturing prices paid index had been above 60 for each of the past 3 months. A return of inflation would put the everyone in a precarious position. And we still have a weak job market. We have the Fed holding down interest rates to kind of keep the economy flowing, keep the activity going, to help it anyway. But it could be forced to choose between the need to rein in inflation and the need to assist the economy. I don't think inflation is high enough yet, Dave, for the Fed to do anything about rates. I mean, it could be just be market, real markets that just push the rates higher. I don't know, to some degree.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, some economists have had their heads in the sand about rising inflation, particularly given the deflationary impact of the pandemic. Macro Policy Perspectives President Julia Coronado, who we quote regularly on this program, said, just a reminder that one-off shifts in prices do not an inflation process make. She added that inflation is steady increases in a broad set of prices underpinned by steady gains in consumer purchasing power. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I like that one. But closely followed inflation metrics are reacting just the same. I mean, 5-year, 10-year, 30-year break-even inflation rates have climbed all week, hitting fresh highs every day since Tuesday that date back to May of last year, 2019, that is. The 5-year forward inflation expectation rose to 1.94% yesterday. That's the highest since July of 2019. But another reality check, Melody? Shadowstats.com puts actual inflation as measured by the CPIU between 5 and 9% using the government's pre-1990 for the 5% and pre-1980 for the 9%. So again, things aren't always what they appear, or in this case, what we're being told they are.
Our dollar gets weaker, it buys less and less, and prices rise and rise and rise. I love it. Only in America and everywhere else around the world. The U.S. trade deficit widened in October as the value of imports climbed to just below pre-pandemic levels, while travel restrictions and consumer wariness continue to depress service exports. You know, everything is being related to pre-pandemic levels. Well, what I think we need to start putting that to recession levels. Went into a recession in February. Didn't have anything to do with the pandemic. So, you know, I think that, you know, they ought to that's how they should really report it. It's not pre-pandemic.
That's a good point.
The shortfall in trade of goods and services expanded to $63 billion in October. That was revised, $62 billion in September. Total imports increased 2.1%. That's the highest since February. While exports advanced for a fifth month, climbing 2.2%. The nation's surplus in services fell 2.2%. It just kind of washes everything out, I suppose. The widening of the deficit reflects a virtual standstill in travel, with spending by visitors to the U.S. dropping to $4 billion, more than two-thirds lower than in February, than the recessions.
Combined, Melody, the value of U.S. exports and imports climbed to $427.2 billion, the highest since February, the pre-recession era, but still down from $469 billion at the end of 2019. Now, the data show that gains made before the pandemic began and before the recession began have been eroded as the outbreak upended supply chains and thus demand.
You know, yesterday we talked about 3M laying off jobs. Well, there's just more and more big company layoffs are coming, Dave. Southwest Airlines, streak of no layoffs, a long-time bragging point for company executives. Well, that may be coming to an end in early 2021. The nation's largest airline sent warnings yesterday to nearly 7,000 workers about potential layoffs. Companies are required to send notices about looming large job cuts by the Federal Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act. Other airlines, most notably American and United, well, they've already issued those notices and laid off tens of thousands of workers. Southwest, they've been in negotiations about pay cuts and other types of savings with its union since October to offset what is said are more than $1 billion in overstaffing costs. Of course, we all know, due to the depressed travel. Vice President of Labor Relations said our absolute goal is to preserve every job at Southwest Airlines. Well, of course it is. We're willing to continue, and yours too. We are willing to continue negotiations to preserve jobs if they can achieve the support. That means government bailout, the kind of support that they need. They need money. They need stimulus. The breakdown of potential layoffs by major work groups, 2,500 airport ramp, operations, cargo agents, 1,500, attendants, 1,200, customer service agents, 1,100, Dave.
Yeah, now the airline said the layoffs will take place on March 15th or April 1st. That's depending on the employee group, unless, of course, negotiations with the unions are successful or the government offers another round of federal aid to airlines. Now, in related news, 3M of Minnesota announced yesterday that it would cut about 2,900 jobs globally and scale back on investments in slower growing markets. That's expected to lead to pre-tax savings of up to $250 million. 120 to $150 million in the fourth quarter of this year. Now, CEO Mike Roman said the COVID-19 pandemic has advanced the pace of change and disrupted end markets around the world, increasing the need for companies to adapt faster. 3M said the restructuring actions would allow it to take advantage of global market trends in e-commerce, healthcare, automotive electrification, and home improvement. The company had over 96,000 employees as of the end of last year.
Wow. And we're heading into the break. Dave will be back, and I will be returning on money. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Melody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Are you?
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody this last segment. Our latest What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, which will be out soon after today's show, is about jobs and joblessness. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and American Survival newsletters at dgscoin.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page at DGS Coins, the at sign DGS Coins, one word. So, the number of people receiving unemployment benefits continues to fall slightly, as we mentioned in the first segment, but it does remain remarkably high just 3 weeks before pandemic assistance programs are set to expire. More than 1 million people a week are still filing for initial job claims, including nearly 300,000 applying for pandemic assistance. As of November 14th, 20.2 million Americans were receiving unemployment benefits of some kind, including more than 13.4 million on the pandemic unemployment assistance and pandemic emergency unemployment compensation programs that were both created as part of the CARES Act in March. Notably, both programs end on December 26th. Merry Christmas, America. Now, the 4.6 million people receiving benefits through the PEUC have been unemployed for at least 6 months. And economists estimate that only about 2.9 million will be eligible for the extended benefits program. It gives an extra 13 weeks of your state-level benefit. The rest and any potential new applicants will be out of luck unless Congress extends either or both of the programs. The U.S. Department of Labor released the latest figures under the specter of a report from the Government Accountability Office that found its weekly releases, quote, do not provide an accurate estimate of the total number of individuals actually claiming unemployment insurance. Remember what Melody said at the top of the program about the accuracy of the numbers? Well, this is why. GAO found that the Labor Department had potentially both overestimated and underestimated the total number of individuals actually claiming unemployment insurance. That means not only are the numbers misleading, but many who qualify for and should be receiving benefits still have not gotten them, even as the pandemic programs are set to end. Now, interestingly, the Labor Department agreed with the GAO findings. Former Labor Chief Economist Heidi Shierholz estimates that as of late October, there were almost 26 million workers unemployed or otherwise out of work or who have lost wages. Over 11 million were officially unemployed in the October jobs report. 7 million have seen pay cuts. 4.5 have dropped out of the labor force, and 3.1 million have been miscalculated as employed. Sheerholz, who's now director of policy at the Economic Policy Institute, added, good data is essential for policymaking, particularly in a crisis, and we did not have that this time around, which, she adds, is unacceptable. Knowing exactly what happened so that we could make the investments to ensure that this never happens again is crucial. Congress, are you listening? Again, ladies and gentlemen, be on the lookout in your email boxes for today's blog after today's program ends. Now, speaking of Congress, with less than 10 days until government funding runs out, lawmakers are down to the wire to fund the government through next September and to provide additional pandemic-related relief to the households and businesses trying to make it through the winter. Now, this week, both Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and now a bipartisan group of lawmakers in both houses release new proposals for additional related relief. A growing number of members of Congress, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, view the bipartisan proposal as a, quote, starting point for renewed negotiations. That proposal is a compromise in both size and scope compared to the House Democrats' HEROES Act passed in May. That was the, I believe, $3.1 trillion proposal, as well as the various iterations of Senate Republican skinny relief proposals. The bipartisan proposal would provide $908 billion in additional pandemic relief aid on top of the nearly $2 trillion already contained in the CARES Act. Now, that's compared to the approximate $3 trillion target I just mentioned, desired by many House Democrats in particular, and the $500 billion target desired by a number of Republicans, primarily in the Senate. The compromise proposal would provide additional federal pandemic unemployment compensation of $300 a week for 4 months. That's down from $600 a week in the CARES Act, but it's more than the zero provided in McConnell's proposal. The proposal, the bipartisan proposal, also appears to continue pandemic unemployment assistance, which extends federal unemployment benefits to those who would not otherwise qualify, such as independent contractors and gig workers. Notably, it would provide $160 billion in aid to state and local governments. That's a key Democratic priority. And the proposal would also provide short-term liability protections for businesses due to the pandemic, a key provision favored by Republicans. An additional $288 billion would be allocated to the Paycheck Protection Program and other small business support. The proposal also allows expenses paid for with PPP funds to be deductible for tax purposes. Now, notably missing from both the bipartisan proposal and the McConnell proposal is another round of direct stimulus payments, which, of course, was included in both the HEROES Act as well as the Republican skinny proposals earlier this year, and of course was $1,200 for qualifying individuals in the CARES Act. Now, McConnell's proposal also does not include a renewal of the federal pandemic unemployment comp, but would continue the extension of base unemployment by 13 weeks, as well as gig and independent contractor coverage for an additional month. Let's see. McConnell's proposal would also expand the $300 above-the-line charitable contribution deduction created in the CARES Act to $600 for single filers and $1,200 for joint filers, and as well as provide a 100% deduction for business meals. And it would also create a tax credit for contributions to scholarship granting organizations, and expand the use of Section 529 education savings accounts for 2 years. Now, if lawmakers do agree on a compromise, it's going to have to be negotiated quickly, as the most likely vehicle for additional relief right now is a government funding bill that has to be passed before funding runs out next Friday. Now, the next administration faces a fragile recovery that could easily fall apart. That's according to Dion Rabuin of Axios, who says, "I do think the economy is in worse shape than most people think." Well, hallelujah. There's someone out there who sees it a little bit more realistically. Put down those rose-colored lenses, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, there is an economic recovery, or more accurately, a rebound occurring, but it's been helping some people immensely and others not at all. And it's that second part that poses a massive risk to a Biden-Harris administration's chance of success. Two big reasons, Dion explains. One, big business, investors, and the wealthy are thriving. But restaurant and bar employees, hotel and airline staff, and other service workers are in a near hopeless situation right now. A depression is an apt description of what they're facing, especially folks in rural and middle America who are parents. 700,000 Americans have been filing unemployment claims every week for 9 months. Plus 20 million people are still on the pre-recession unemployment rolls. That's unheard of. It's incredibly bad. And two, as we've been telling you, government statistics, because of the way they've always been reported, understate in particular, but also overstate a lot of red flags. The official unemployment rate has been dropping, but that's because it never really counted gig economy workers well in the first place. Its data collection abilities have been severely crimped by the pandemic, and lots of people are simply falling out of the labor force. They're not working, and they're not looking either. What's next? Well, 13.5 million people are in pandemic unemployment programs that expire in just 22 days from now. You want to see what that does to the economy? Tune in early next year. Now, interesting, on the international front, Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe is saying China and China alone is the only country that has the ability to compete with the United States. In an op-ed penned in today's Wall Street Journal, Ratcliffe argues the People's Republic of China poses the greatest threat to America today and the greatest threat to democracy and freedom worldwide since World War II. Now, many of our longtime listeners will know it's exceedingly rare for the head of the U.S. intelligence community to make public accusations about a rival power. And this PR blitz is one of the first major components of a broader effort to raise alarm about China and to build consensus and awareness about China's intent to replace the U.S. as the world's dominant power, economic and military. The role of the intelligence community is to warn the president and senior policymakers of such threats. But typically, such intelligence isn't discussed publicly, especially on the record. Now, Ratcliffe, who's a Trump loyalist, who's a former federal prosecutor and congressman from Texas, said it's always better to fight downhill. We're still stronger. I don't want our country to be in a position where we fight them uphill. Radcliffe went on to say China poses a graver threat than the Soviet Union once did. That's because the USSR was primarily a military competitor, he said, while China aims to win in economic, technological, and military competition around the globe. This shows that senior intelligence officials are worried that the Biden administration may pull in the reins on the Trump era's harder line against China. This is the last big effort to try to persuade the American public that regardless of your political leanings, China's in a is a profound danger to U.S. interests and Western democracy at large. Now, we're just about out of time for today's program. We'll just start this story. We see that OPEC Plus has agreed to ease oil output cuts next year after almost a week of negotiations that actually exposed a new rift at the heart of the cartel. The group reportedly will add 500,000 barrels a day of production to the market in January, and ministers will then hold monthly consultations to decide on the next step. And that's a much shorter time frame than OPEC Plus usually operates under, every 3 months, I think. But the compromise deal did avoid a breakdown of the group's unity, which had become a growing risk after days of tense talks exposed the new split between the core cartel members, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. I'm Dave Allen. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Please have a good weekend and be safe out there. Bye-bye. In my